You're listening to the only show that looks at business from a different perspective, the coaching perspective with Master Certified Business Coach, Doug Gefeller.
And welcome to today's episode of The Coaching Perspective. I'm your host, Doug Gefeller, and our topic for today is business partnerships in trouble, how to save them. Well, if you're listening to this show live, then obviously you're on octalkradio.net. Thank you very much. Our producer appreciates that. Our sponsors appreciate it. If you're listening to our podcast, then thank you very much. You could be any one of a number of places. You could be listening to the podcast from our website, from Podbeam, or as of this week, you could be listening to it on iTunes. For those of you who've been after us to get on iTunes, I apologize for the delay, but hey, we're there. Just go to podcasts and search for The Coaching Perspective. All of the great shows that you may have missed are there waiting for you. Well, let's talk about today's program. You know, business partnerships in trouble, how to save them. What a title. They're good partnerships and they're bad partnerships. But we never talk about those that were good but that are now in trouble. And what I want to talk about is some of the steps that you could or could have taken to avoid the problem and what you can do to now save the partnership. And to do this, I want to share some of the experiences that I've had in my coaching of executives and businesses for the last 18 years, and more specifically, some of my own personal experiences with partnerships. You know, I always kind of start out a topic like this by making sure that I've got the definitions right. So, of course, Wikipedia says that a partnership is an agreement where parties agree to cooperate in advance. Cooperate to advance their mutual interests. Yet a partnership is formed between one or more businesses in which partners or owners co-labor to achieve and share profits and losses. Partnerships present challenges, even Wikipedia says that, overreaching goals, levels of give and take, areas of responsibility, lines of authority and succession, how success is evaluated and distributed, are often a variety of the factors that need to be negotiated and agreed upon in a partnership. And, of course, once you have an agreement, it is typically enforced by civil law, especially if you've documented it. You know, I really like the SBA definition of Small Business Administration, definition of partnerships even better. It says, a partnership is a single business where two or more people share ownership, and each partner contributes to all aspects of the business, including money, property, labor, or skill. In return, each partner shares in the profits and losses of the business. You know, I wish it was that simple, but it isn't. And let me just say, before I get into sharing some of my personal examples here today, that preparing for this show, for me personally, has been rather cathartic. You know, when you're involved in a partnership and it ends, you sometimes have a bad taste. Sometimes you need to go back and look at it and go, you know what? It really worked out great. How many things have not worked out the way we planned, but they were even better than what we had anticipated, just different? And it's all a matter of coming to grips to it. So let me just start by saying that personally, I have never been in a partnership that I did not benefit from. I also think my partners might say the same thing. At least I hope they would. Well, the first partnership I want to talk to you about, my first partnership, was when I was in the seventh grade. And I started a lawn servicing business with my best friend, Kenny Ross. Besides the two of us, we had a silent financial partner. Boy, doesn't that sound sophisticated for the seventh grade? Well, our silent financial partner was Kenny's brother, who, as I remember it, assigned to get us an account at Sears so that we could buy a lawnmower on a payment plan. And, of course, us being in the seventh grade, we were not an acceptable credit risk. Today, I'm sure we could get good credit. We could probably finance a home today, but seventh graders can do anything today. Kenny was the idea guy, and we shared the manual labor and the sales work equally. We never went anyplace without the other person. Profits were what we collected less our payments to Sears and repairs on the bicycle we used to haul the mower around, and we shared those equally. Pretty simple partnership. Well, how did it end? You know, I'm not sure I remember all the details, but I think it ended because Kenny's family moved out of the area, and that pretty much put us out of business. He had to go with the mom and dad. How did we handle the final distribution of assets? Boy, if somebody had used that term when we were in the seventh grade, we wouldn't know what they were talking about. But Kenny got both the mower, which was now paid for, and the bicycle, which was his to begin with. I walked away with having had a great business experience, having earned my own spending money, and the fun of being in business with someone I really liked. Why did Kenny get the mower? Well, it was his brother that took the financial risk, so it only seemed fair to us at the time. You know, the partnership ended well because of a close friendship. Little money was involved, and we were in it for the experience more than for the cash. You know, if this had been a large, sophisticated business venture with significant assets, there would have been trouble in spite of friendships. No agreement up front on how to handle the assets and the customers on dissolution. No not-to-compete agreements. We didn't have any of those things. But because there was little money, because we were doing it for fun, because we were in the seventh grade, this partnership worked out great. So why am I telling you this story today? I want to know how many of you are still treating your partnerships like you're in junior high school. No agreements, no plans about dissolution, no assumptions about maybe everything won't go perfect. You know, we need to look at it. Well, you know, the next partnership many years later moved me into my first and second ownership positions. I had left my executive position at the Irvine Company when sold in the late 70s to find another position in the building business. And while I was looking for a new job, an individual I knew who owned a residential building company approached me and suggested that we start a new company for developing raw land. He agreed to fund the company and provide office space for me, and I would provide all the labor and run the business. A formal partnership agreement was drawn up with him owning 51% and me owning 49%. Seemed okay to me. I owned zero before we started, so... You know, our first issue resulted from a difference of understanding on what it meant to fund the company. I quite naively had assumed it meant providing money to buy land, while his assumption was it meant providing operating cash only and not investment dollars. We got past this hurdle by his introducing me to a financial investor for the projects that I wanted to do, and this solved the money problem, but it required giving up 50% of the project profits. This now meant that I was working for only 49% of 50%. The next hurdle came when it was time to sell the first project that I'd developed. Our understanding, let me interject here, not documented at all, our understanding on creating the company was that I would first offer any properties to his building company before offering them to an outsider. Well, this was okay, but we hadn't documented how to negotiate the price that the property would be offered at. And, of course, we both had different ideas as to what the value of that property was. You know, the resolution of those issues was that under the partnership agreement, I was kind of forced to make an offer to buy out my partner, and he accepted. This now left me with 100% ownership of a business that owed my past partner and the IRS a whole lot of money. Let me interject here that the observation that without this experience, I would probably never have had the courage to go into business for myself. So I have a lot to be thankful for to my partners in that business, even though it didn't work out in the traditional sense of what I wanted. You know, what were some of the lessons that I learned from that? One, make sure that all understandings are documented in the agreement. You know, take the time when you start a partnership to sort of mentally walk through all the possible things that could happen and then read the proposed partnership agreement and see if it spells out how you would handle those things. Too many times we just assume things are going to go smoothly, and we don't want to, at the start of a business, to take sort of a negative attitude of looking at what could go wrong. But hey, guess what? Whoever started anything and had it go all perfect. Call in right now because we want to know who you are. I want to put my money with you. An alternate way to handle disputes other than resorting to World War III, which is the buyout clause, is to have each partner own only 49% and then find an impartial third party that's going to hold the other 2% with some very well-defined limitations and authority. You know, this is an idea that I wasn't that familiar with many years ago, but more recently it's really come into vogue, the idea that if there's two partners, find a third arbitrator and let them hold some of the ownership but doesn't get any of the profits and only gets to vote and decide on those key issues. Otherwise, with a 50-50 partnership, what you're guaranteeing yourself is the minute you can't agree, you end the partnership. Not always the best solution. Sort of the third lesson that I learned from that partnership was make sure that my business objectives or that the business objectives of both parties are compatible. In this particular case, my objective was to maximize the profits in the development company, while my partner's objectives were to acquire land for his building company at under market price. If we had put it down that clearly on paper, we would have seen right away that there was going to be a problem. Nobody was being deceitful here. We had just not thought through the ultimate consequences of the differences in our objectives and how they could cause problems with the partnership. You know, again, didn't work out the way we planned. Sure gave me a lot of benefits, you know, let me make some money, got me into business, got me past the mentality of being a corporate employee. But, you know, there are lessons to be learned there. And one of the key lessons is the more money involved, the more lessons there are to be learned, the more likely it is that there will be differences in interpretations. When Kenny and I had the lawnmower business, we didn't have any problems interpreting differences. When I had the building company and we were involved with millions of dollars, all of a sudden interpretation made a big difference. Well, let me share with you the next partnership. A new financial limited partnership allowed me to expand my company and to reorganize it from a development company into a residential building company. You know, as a result of the previous partnership, I set about finding a way to be able to do my own thing. Interpret that to mean full 100% control. And yet to get the financial help that I needed to grow. The creation of individual limited partnerships for each project let me keep 100% ownership and control of my building company while getting the investment cash that I needed for each individual project. These limited partnerships agreement were very clear that I had 100% of the liability, but I gave up 50% of the project profits. This time around, we were very careful to define all the terms in the agreement and never had an issue over the 7 years that I used this model as a result of interpretation of the agreement. Where we ultimately had an issue was not from the agreement, but an ethical issue. This resulted in 2 years of legal disputes, 1 month in court, and the judge finally ruling that nobody had done anything wrong, but the partnerships needed to be dissolved because it was obvious that we couldn't get along. Well, this resulted in the fire sale of some of the partnership assets and $400,000 of legal expenses that I had to pay. Not exactly what I looked for in starting this. But really, if you look at it with the benefit of time and hindsight, the end result of those limited partnerships was that it did allow me to grow my building company. It allowed me to make a lot of money over a 7 year period. And the fact that it created problems on its dissolution and cost me legal fees, those in no way offset the benefits that it had generated during the 7 years that I was involved in those partnerships. The loss was more in the nature of loss opportunities going forward, which can be as painful as real money that you've lost in the past. What were some of the lessons that I learned from that partnership? Well, the character of the partner you pick is even more important than the legal agreement. When there are millions of dollars at stake, recognize that some people's values change, and you need to identify that up front. The other lesson was you can be legally right and still lose. 2 years of time, $400,000 of legal expenses, a loss of employee focus, it didn't offset my being right. It was a lot of wasted time and money that took away from the business going forward. 2 years, basically, of the business being stagnant. You know, the limited partnership, and this is maybe the key lesson here, the limited partnership agreement could have been written better to protect us in the event of those circumstances. Oh, did I forget to mention that to save some money, I used my financial partner's attorney to draw the documents because I thought he would be fair to both of us. Guess who his biggest client was? And it, number one, it wasn't me. So, you know, sometimes we make some really ridiculous decisions going into partnerships to save a few dollars or something that looked like it might have been the right thing at the time. Well, let's continue. You know, I wish I could tell you the stories about all of the screw-ups that the people that I coach have made in partnerships, but the confidentiality thing kind of gets in the way. So I've had to resort here today to sort of revealing my own dirty laundry or what I've learned along the way. Well, tired of working alone, I entered my next partnership by creating an alliance rather than a legal entity. Read the fine print here. After getting out of the building business, I had purchased a franchise for creating and facilitating executive advisory boards. At the same time, I started my coaching business and for the next 15 years ran both businesses without any partners. I then had the opportunity to work with another franchisee that was just starting his business. It quickly became obvious that his sales skills were much greater than mine and that my coaching experience filled a void where he had no experience. It seemed like a perfect matching of skills that would allow us to provide a more complete offering to clients together than we could do alone. So we prepared an alliance agreement that was just a written understanding of the roles that each of us would play on a daily basis and how we'd handle the co-mingled business if we should decide to stop working together. It was our objective to not create a legal document with all of the associated costs and issues, but to just make sure that what we had written on paper was exactly what both of us meant when we talked about it verbally. You know, and to that extent, it worked perfectly. The alliance came to an end, however, due to a number of reasons. One, due to my partner wanting to participate more in the coaching area, and due to my wanting to avoid my next 10-year renewal of my franchise agreement. So while this end came sooner than we'd anticipated originally, we both walked away having benefited from the alliance agreement and without any legal disputes. You know, I benefited from having an exit plan that took care of my long-term clients. I benefited by being able to continue with my coaching business without any interruption because it had been kept separate from that agreement. And, hey, I consider this a benefit. You'll have to tell me whether you do or not. I benefited because I wouldn't be doing a radio show today if I hadn't been in business with that partner because the radio show was really his idea and the producer's idea, now the producer, of OC Talk Radio. I was a little skeptical of it, but I went along, and hey, it turned out to be a great thing. So I had a lot of benefits from that partnership. What are some of the lessons that I learned? Well, number one, a well-written agreement, even if it's not a legal document, can avoid problems. And in this case, it worked out perfect for us. The other thing is that circumstances change the best plans, and you need to be ready to address them when they happen, whether you like it or not. I had not planned to sell my advisory business this early, but it turned out to be the best thing for both partners to do it at that time. And the third is that talking about the issues is essential no matter how difficult. And really, when you're talking about these difficult issues, having a third party facilitate the discussion is definitely the way to go. You know, when we first started to realize that our goals for the alliance agreement were starting to change, were starting to differ from what we'd set up originally, it was difficult to talk about it because nobody wanted to hurt anybody's feelings. We worked together on a daily basis. We worked together. We did things socially. We were good friends. We're still good friends. And luckily, it was, and this was my partner's suggestion, he suggested we have a third party facilitate a discussion of this. And, you know, it was so much easier with somebody else facilitating the discussion. A lot of things got put on the table that I think if we hadn't done that, it probably would have been months and painful months before we really sat down and addressed them in a very non-emotional way. You know, a lot of benefits there. Well, three stories. Will there be another partnership in the future for me? Giving up on partnerships would be like stopping driving the car because you got a few tickets. You know, you just need to be aware that things may not always turn out the way you want them to, but they can still be okay. So I'm not death on partnerships. I think that they serve a great purpose, but I think there's a lot of cautions, a lot of things you have to be careful of. So let me talk for a minute about some tips for making partnerships work. Number one, and we've kind of already covered it, when things do not seem to be going well with you and your partner, get someone to facilitate an in-depth discussion of what's wrong and how you can fix it. Maybe the solution can be, you know, maybe the solution isn't dissolving the partnership. Maybe the solution is changing some things. What are some of the early warning signs that you're starting to have problems with your partnership? Well, and I've seen these with clients that I've coached many times. They stop trusting each other with decision making. They don't let the other person have the ability to make the decision that were probably spelled out as their responsibility at the beginning of the partnership. They don't communicate when problems come up. Oh, boy, I wish, you know, as the saying goes, I wish I had a nickel for every time I heard this. How many times as a coach have you been called in because there was a partnership issue only to find out that all the partners weren't present when you got there? And you go, well, where's the other partners? Well, I haven't talked to them about this. Well, come on. How are you going to solve it if you don't talk about it? Another issue, a clear definition of roles. You know, in my last partnership or alliance, we had a clear definition of roles. He'd sell, I'd coach. Worked well for us. Did it work for 4 years? No, it worked great for 3 years. And then we decided, hey, we want to change that model. Another issue that frequently is an early warning indicator for problems in the partnership, too many egos in the room. Too many times you hear, it's got to be my way, okay? What you start to see is that you become competitive with one another rather than being cooperative with one another. Certainly an indication that we're starting to have problems, which always results in control issues. You know, the key tip-off for me when I meet with the partners is when I find out nobody has any authority to make any decision, everything has been relegated to all the partners getting together and deciding on it unanimously. You can't run a business that way. Things are too fast-paced in today's environment. Another early warning sign is when you and your partner's vision for the business are no longer compatible. You know, and this is why I encourage people to at least annually sit down, if not more often, and relook at the vision statement you've got for the company and make sure that it's still valid. Make sure that you've still bought into it. You know, many times in that sort of business planning process, we look at it and say, has the market changed? But what I'm saying is, have the partners changed? You know, I've been called in a number of times, and it's probably a result of the changing demographics in business today, the graying of entrepreneurs and corporate America. And all of a sudden, you've got a situation where the one partner who was always the one to put in 60-hour weeks says, I don't want to come to work 5 days a week anymore, certainly not six. And the other partner goes, well, who's going to do the work then? That's always been your role. So you've got a changing of the vision. You've got a change of what you want to do. Another sign that you're going to have problems with the partnership is failure to document decisions and discussions. You know, too many meetings with no written conclusions or no written documentation of what was agreed to in the meeting. And then the way you start the next meeting is by arguing over what was agreed to in the last meeting. Boy, this is an endless cycle. Discussions where emotions are the rule rather than the exception. You know, when we get emotional, we just don't make good decisions. And the one that hurts the most is when values are in conflict. You know, I don't know what the cure for that is other than being very cautious at the front end that you really know who you're going in business with, and you really know what they believe in and how they're going to practice their business. Obviously, and everybody is going to tell you, you need a written agreement to go into a partnership. You need an exit strategy, and maybe you need more than one exit strategy. Maybe you need a couple of exit scenarios under different circumstances, what would be the exit plan for the partnership. We've talked about the fact that 50-50 ownership doesn't allow really for the resolution of issues without going to World War III, without going to DEPCON 1 or what 5 or whatever you want to call it. You know, if we can't agree on something as simple as whether we should buy new furniture for the conference room, you know, why does that have to be a major decision? Let's have a way to get past that. And don't assume that your friendship with somebody is going to replace a written document, unless you're dealing with my friend Kenny and you're back in the seventh grade, and then I think it might work. Be real clear on what each partner's contribution is going to be in terms of money and time. You know, one of the most frustrating things for me, I think, over a long period of working with problem partnerships was a situation where I was coaching some partners that were really great individuals. Individually, each one of these guys was somebody that I would really like to do business with. But when you looked at how they valued contributions and how they valued success, it became a real problem. One of the partners was a real workaholic. He put in untold number of hours. The other partner was a master at delegation. He was able to hire people, delegate responsibility to them, set up systems and procedures to check and make sure everything was going okay. In fact, he had done such a good job of that that he was able to show up only periodically. He hardly ever put in an 8-hour day. He didn't always come in 5 days a week. But his end of the business was running as smooth or smoother than anybody else's end of the business. But the workaholic partner just couldn't see it. If you weren't there working, you weren't holding up your end of the deal. You know, this was something they never thought about documenting in the early stages of the partnership. You know, if I'm going to judge you based upon the number of hours you work rather than how well you bring in clients or how quickly you produce end results in your area of the business, we need to get those things out on the table. It isn't just capital contribution. It's how are we judging the blood, sweat, and equities that people are putting in on a daily basis. You know, the other thing is just because things have changed doesn't mean that the partnership isn't going to work anymore. It doesn't mean you can't work together. It's time to revise the partnership agreement. Who set this? This is not set in stone. It can be revised. If you don't have 3 or 4 amendments to your partnership agreement, you're not looking at it often enough. That's my rule of thumb, because nothing stays the same. And hey, when it all comes down to the fact that this just doesn't work anymore, break up the partnership with grace and move on with dignity. You know, it isn't anybody's fault. Things just change, you know. One of the things that you want to look at and make sure that you really have before even starting the partnership is a shared vision of where the company is going to go. What is it you're really trying to achieve? My early partnership, boy, if we had laid down on paper that my vision was to be able to maximize the profits out of the development end of the business, and he had laid down on paper that his vision was to be able to buy the projects that the company did at below market rate, we would have said, oh, wait, stop right there. We have a conflict between those two points of view. How are we going to resolve this? And things might have worked a lot different. You know, the other thing is, and I don't see this documented at all, but it's something that I really advocate when people are talking about going into partnership is not only understand what the goals are for the company, what the vision is for the company that you're going to create, but you need to understand individual goals. You know, and again, these change over time. two partners starting out right out of college, creating their own service business, go, our goals are exactly the same. We want to create a business that lets us practice our discipline, that lets us make a living, that lets us make a standard of living better than what we've got. And then we revisit them 20 years later, and they go, you know, one partner says, well, my vision is to become a big name, to become a known commodity in our field. And the other one says, my vision is to work 3 days a week. Well, all of a sudden, we have a difference of opinion here. We have a difference in vision. It can be worked out, but if you don't get it on the table, you're never going to address how you're going to work it out. You know, those are just some of the things. I mean, if you want a lot more, I mean, you can Google partnerships. You can Google partnership breakups. You can Google starting partnerships, ending partnerships, shooting partnerships, blowing partnerships up. I mean, there is so much information on the internet about partnerships, but, you know, I thought today that maybe the best thing would be to share some of my own personal experiences, some of the lessons that I've learned from it, and to say that partnerships aren't bad. They aren't also the answer to everything. So you want to look carefully at what your goals are, who you're in business with, what the objectives are, how you're going to get out if it doesn't work, and go from that point of view. You know what? I think our producer wants to interject here for a minute.
I sit here silently listening to these shows, and I learn so much from your thoughtful comments that you work out. But this one hit me where I live. I got to tell you, I too have been through multiple partnerships, and every time I swear, it's like multiple marriages. Ain't going to do that again. And then all of a sudden, you fall in love and find something, and you think it's all going to work out. And what I'm thinking is, do you ever coach people who are about to be partners? Do you ever find two people that are thinking? It's sort of like marriage counseling before you get married. You know, I'm a good Irish Catholic, so they want you to go talk to the priest before you take your vows here to, you know, try and understand a little bit more about what you're about to enter into. But nobody ever did that with me when I entered into partnerships. Have you ever done that?
You know, Paul, that is a great point, and yes, I have done it. And in fact, this year, I was working with some people that were setting up a new business, and I had worked with one of the individuals previously, and so they asked, would I come in and coach the two partners on getting their business started? And I sat down with them, and I identified, you've got some differences, and you've got some things that the two of you are saying the opposite thing, and you're not listening to each other, and you need to document this. But you know what? It's sad to say that the excitement of the moment, creating this new venture, the baby was about to be born, and hey, we love each other, and we, you know, we're joint parents here, and it's going to be okay.
And we can talk through anything, right? We'll address anything. One of the things that my father was an executive for Chrysler Corporation for 30 years, regional manager, national sales manager, all sorts of things, and he dealt primarily with dealers. And he said, you know, so many auto dealers have partnerships, and he said, I'm sorry to say that almost none of them work. Because one partner or the other inevitably feels like they're doing more work than the other guy. How do you, and you talked about that, you know, one person's expectation is you're going to be in the, I had a partnership like that, and I sort of saw myself as the outside guy, and he was always mad that I wasn't sitting in the office, and I'm like, that's not where we're going to make money here.
Yeah, see, this is a matter of, part of the partnership agreement is clarifying the roles that each of you are going to play.
Mm-hmm.
The contribution that you're going to make, and agreeing that I'm okay with you, Paul, only working 3 days a week as long as you produce 50 shows a month.
Yeah, right.
You know, any way you want to do it, I don't care whether you delegate it or whatever, but if you can do that, I'm okay with it. But people don't have those conversations.
No, and when things change, I had another partner. I was a partner in a big Hollywood PR firm. Older guy took me in. I thought, wow, what a great opportunity. He really just saw me as a way of taking over the business and buying it from him someday. And I didn't realize that the more I got involved, his involvement went down dramatically. The lunches were longer. You know, he came in later. He had fewer and fewer client meetings. And it came to the point where I felt I was not only doing all the work, which I was okay in the beginning, but he wasn't bringing in any new business. I was bringing in the business, and I was handling it all, and he was basically, you know, getting half of everything we were doing. And it was hard. It wasn't until it was too late that we had that conversation, and by that point, I was already too mad to continue on.
See, and that brings up the other point. Not only do you have to have the conversation at the beginning of the partnership, mm-hmm. you have to revisit the conversation because things change.
Mm-hmm.
It would be okay if we talked about it. There may be something we can trade off. Maybe we agree that since I'm taking long lunches and not bringing any new clients, maybe you ought to get an extra 5% of profits that you weren't getting before, and I'm more than happy with doing that. But if you don't talk about it,
yep.
you end up getting resentful. You end up saying things that aren't nice, and then mm-hmm. the partnership can't be solved.
Yep. No, by the time we had the meeting, it was me having a meeting telling him I was done, and he was shocked. You know, and it was too late. And because I didn't, and I pride myself on good communication skills. I think that's critical for personal relationships and business relationships. But darn it, I just didn't do it in that case. I let it build up. He was a respected older guy. I was grateful for the opportunity. I just kind of swallowed it until I couldn't swallow it anymore here.
Yeah, it's very frustrating, and it's not too dissimilar from marriage relationships.
Yes, right. That's what I was going to say. It sounds a lot like marriage. If people would just communicate, and I always said in marriage, the key is, I've only gone through this once here, but my wife was married previously, and she said, we just didn't talk about things after a while. We got into a routine, and I'm tired, and he's tired, and we didn't talk about a lot of these things. And so we've tried to, it's not always easy, you don't always feel like doing it, but we really try and keep each other. Sometimes it's me, sometimes it's her, but we really try and keep communicating on a daily basis. Don't let weeks go by and things build up.
You know, I think the most painful partnerships I've seen, painful to me looking at them from the outside, are those that have existed for a long time and are still going, but the partners don't talk to each other and they're not happy with the contribution that each other's making, but they don't know how to bring up the conversation. They don't know how to deal with it.
As a marketing person / PR person, I would go into big companies, and I did mostly work when I got out of entertainment, got into that. I was doing mostly sort of home entertainment, pool tables, hot tubs, things like that. And there was a company, I won't name it, but they're a market leader in their segment, and it was two brothers. Anybody listening who knows me knows who I'm talking about. And they had built this company from nothing into a, I don't know, $50 million, $100 million company, very successful company. And somewhere along the way, these two brothers who had been so close at one time had gotten into so many arguments and disagreements over the direction of the company that they could not talk to each other anymore. And one was president, one was CEO, and you would literally go in and have a meeting with one, and we'd say, well, what is, you know, I almost said the brother's name, what does he say about this? He'd say, I don't know. Why don't you go ask him? They had offices next to each other, and they could, hundreds of people working for them, very successful company, and they could not talk to each other, even though they were next to each other. I never saw a more dysfunctional organization.
Well, you know, partnerships can be difficult. The one thing that can make it even more difficult is when you overlay the fact that it's family that you're in partnership with.
Absolutely.
And now,
because it never goes away. At Thanksgiving dinner, they're getting in arguments over the business or whatever, you know.
Yeah, you bring everything into it, and you bring. When we were 12, I didn't like the way you treated me.
Yeah, all right.
Here we are at 40, talking about the business, and I'm going to get even with you about the fact that you broke all my soldiers when we were 12.
Yeah, right.
So yeah, there's a lot of things. There's a tremendous coaching opportunity here for coaches.
I'm thinking, I've never heard it. Just why it occurred to me, I had to speak up because I can. Coaches historically, you think of either a personal coach, I want to do something better, or you think of a business coach. There's somebody in our organization that needs help or transitioning in or out or whatever, and we don't have the time or resources to do it, and we want to bring in somebody from an outside perspective. But at that beginning of the marriage, no, just, and for all the reasons you talk about, oh my God, what a great idea, and we love each other, and we're always going to get along, and this is going to work forever, and we're not going to think anything negative about it. It's almost like a prenuptial agreement. I don't want to think of those things that you want me to ask how to dissolve this thing. It's going to go on forever. We're in love, you know.
Well, I mean, who's involved Who's involved in the prenuptial agreement?
Mm-hmm.
The attorney.
Yeah.
The two parties, would, you know, they'd never get married if they had to work out the prenuptial by themselves.
Yeah, right.
You know, it would be too negative. Well, if you cheat on me.
Yeah. Cheat? You're thinking of cheating on me? No. I'm just saying that if you did. Well, I would never do that. Why would you say that? How could you even think that of me? Yeah.
But the attorney's able to say, in the event that this happened, and I've seen it happen before, how would we deal with it? So, you know, it's a safe way to explore and talk about those circumstances. And that's the same thing that a coach can do in a partnership situation. And I think when you're creating a partnership, get a coach to help you facilitate it. When you're in a partnership, get a coach to check your health. You need a tune-up on your partnership more often than you need a tune-up on your car these days, you know?
You need to go out. I'm going to come up with a whole separate business for you here. I don't know if you're ready to embark on something new, but you could go meet attorneys who are drafting partnership agreements, business attorneys, or you could go to these, you know, Tech Coast Angel kind of organizations that are where people are suddenly coming together and are going to look to grow rapidly. And just say, look, for the sake of your long-term success, I want you to go through some program, some coaching, some therapy session here with me here, and let's identify some of these things, because so many of them pop up later. We all know the great stories, you know, Steve Jobs getting kicked out of his own company and those kinds of things. It all happens down the road, and it all could have been avoided had they addressed some of these things up front.
You know, a less secure person might be very uncomfortable with you suggesting to all my competitive coaches how they can get into this business that I'm already into. But hey, you know, well, that's okay with me. In the profession here. That's what we're doing the show for. We're trying to give back a little bit.
Well, it's not as easy as the trick sounds. I mean, I think you've got to be able to perform, too. And I'm not sure that all coaches have as do. You really seem like you've been through this personally, and you've been through it professionally. And for me, what you said resonated. You know, I can teach people, tell people all day long they should go pull a rabbit out of the hat. That doesn't mean they can do it.
Well, Paul, I appreciate your input on it. I wish you'd we maybe have to make that a regular part of the show.
I like that. I usually just sit quietly here, but I felt compelled to speak up today.
Thank you very much. Hey, speaking of pulling rabbits out of the hat, next week, our last show of the year, we are going to be talking with Robin McNatt. And Robin's company is Style Laughter, and she is an improvisation comedy company. And she is going to talk to us about how you can use improv in business and in coaching.
I love it.
I had an opportunity to see Robin give a display of that just yesterday at the ASTD year-end meeting. And I grabbed her right afterwards and said, Robin, you got to be on the show. This is the kind of up cop topic that we want to wrap up the year for. So I'm really looking forward to that, and I want you all to join us next Thursday here on OC Talk Radio at 4 o'clock. So, you know, I would be remiss before we sign off saying, you know, hey, I've got some services to offer here. Why don't you call me? Paul's given you some ideas.
I gave you one great idea right there.
Thank you very much. You know, we have been coaching executives, business owners, partnerships for over 18 years here in Orange County under the banner of the Coaching Perspective. Our focus is to help you and your team and your company to get clear on your goals, both individually and personally, and to become more productive. So if we can help you with that, give us a call. You can reach us at the Coaching Perspective. Go to our website. It's got all the contact information on that. Hey, in case you need some last-minute things to do, go put on your finest duds. Join us at the Wyndham Hotel at 6 o'clock tonight for the final meeting of the year for the local International Coach Federation chapter. We'll be whisking out the old officers with a broom and installing the new officers and sharing some of our plans for 2013. Again, I want to remind you that you can, if you've missed the show or missed any of the past shows, besides listening to us live on this great talk radio station, you can always catch the shows on our website where we post them on Podbeam, or now you can find them on iTunes, which is maybe almost the easiest way to find them.
And so, I've been dying to do this since you started the show. It's Podbean like Jack and the Beanstalk. You always say beam like moonbeams. B-E-A-N. Oh.
Well, that's my allergies talking.
it's your residual East Coast accent that's still haunting you here.
Boy, that does go back a long time. Well, look, it's been a great show. It's been a great year. This is a topic that, as you can tell, I've got a lot of personal investment in, and I really enjoy helping people with partnership issues, either before they get created or solving them once they are created. So if we can help, let us know. Let me just say, this is Doug Gefeller signing off, and I hope you've enjoyed the show today and that the discussion has provided you with new ideas and information that you can use to identify and achieve your goals. And thanks for our surprise guest today.
Happy to join in. Every so often, I got to speak up. It's the end of the year.
Okay. Have a good evening.
You've been listening to the only show that looks at business from a different perspective, the Coaching Perspective, with Master Certified Business Coach and Partnership Expert, Doug Gefeller.